In the Mid-Atlantic, Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a frost and staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous.
We're back at the races, pretty well into hour three, 20 minutes in. Andy Serling joining us from the New York Racing Association. And Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Really good. You know, easy to be excited about what lies ahead after a weekend like that.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend of racing. I agree.
We should probably launch into it because we got lots to do, and just wrapped up with Chad actually, and I mean he came as close to having as crazy a monster Saturday as a horseman could have. Still pretty good, second in three stakes. Meantime, the finishes, Todd Pletcher and. Let's start with the Wood, obviously Mo Donegal and Zandon, meanwhile at Keeneland, pretty good result for the Remsen runners from last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I said something on Twitter about this, where this there's this the number of really moronic narratives on Twitter, also hurtful and dishonest narratives as well, but that come up. It's like the Remsen's a bad race. This race is a good race. To anoint a race, a good or bad race, as a generality because of a result here and there is just stupid. the race itself is not relevant. It's the horses that are in it that become relevant. You know, the notion that the Arkansas Derby was this great prep because there were a number of years where good horses ran in it. How is the Arkansas races this year? You know, it's like some years they're weak, some years they're very good. You know, this is a down year for them. You know, the Remsen's had a share of good horses. The idea that, you know, this narrative, the Wood has not been, you know, productive race in the Derby. Well, you know, Escadre, I probably would have won the Triple Crown. The number of horses that have won the Wood or run it have gone on to do big things. Was Medaglia d'Oro a bad horse in the Wood? You know, runner-ups have done well. It's a frivolous notion. This year's Remsen, to anybody that follows horse racing, was pretty clear that Bo Donegal and Zandon were pretty good darn horses. And it's not surprisingly that they've both gone on to do well. They have good trainers and they're good horses. And good horses and good trainers bars often do well. You know, what about the Remsen would have given anybody that actually understands racing the idea that it wasn't very possibly going to prove to be a good race going forward? Because it was the Remsen, somehow those horses were cursed going forward? Is that how it works? Is it like the Bermuda Triangle of racing? So, yeah, you know, I mean, there's Danden, you know. I mean, it's funny because it's not a comparable actual situation overall because of the notion that the horses now hang the Derby, but a lot of people, and rightfully so, are talking about Taiba winning the Santa Anita Derby in his second start, going from 6 furlongs to 1 1/8 and running 102 buyer. Well, as a 2-year-old, Zandon went from 6 furlongs yep. maiden race to 1 1/8 stake and went to a 90 buyer. Very comparable when you think about routine improvement over a 5-month period, you know, running roughly 10 points higher. It sort of compares the two horses in a very favorable way. The difference being that those were 2-year-old races. You know, Chad acknowledged that he was rushing into the Remsen, but he had gotten sick for 5 minutes and missed the Nashua, and he was doing well, and he thought he was right to run there. And now he's had 2 preps in the Derby, so he's got, you know, a reasonable amount of bottom for this day and age of the Derby, whereas Tabe obviously doesn't. But it's interesting that people are talking about that incredible achievement by him, which is fair to say, but it's really no different than what Zandon did last year in the Remsen.
Agreed, and it also occurs to me, I referenced to Chad about early voting, saying, you know, that he's obviously, you know, very lightly raced, and in fact, Zandon isn't even that heavily raced with only 4 starts. But I mean, early voting is going to potentially come into the Derby, depending on how they decide, because it sure feels.
What did Chad say?
He said that they're
not saying anything.
Well, they're going to continue to monitor the field. I brought up Forbidden Kingdom and Classic Causeway demurring, and you know that there's 2 other speeds that you would have had to have worried about otherwise that you don't have to now. And he said, listen, we're aware of who the other speeds might be, and that we'll monitor. I mean, but when you've got cloud computing as a blueprint, that's a pretty right. tempting path.
Right. And for people that'll say that whatever reason Chad isn't running early voting in the Derby, if you're Chad Brown, you're looking at it from a perfectly only selfish point of view. You want to run early voting in the Derby. Because A, even if he's 30-1, it gives you a 3% chance to win the Derby. One. But more importantly, it adds more speed to the race, which could only help Zandon. So from a selfish standpoint, Chad should absolutely run him, even if it's to the horse's detriment, right? Because it only helps his chances of winning at the Kentucky Derby. So if he decides not to run him, and obviously it's a decision he makes with the connections, it's a decision that's being made in the best interest of the horse. And they may run him. You know, I'm not going to say he's not going to run. Obviously, the decision has been made. I've spoken to Seth as well, but, you know, it's an ongoing decision. But, I think if you take a more broad view of it, it may not be the best spot for him going forward. You know, his horse has done an awful lot in a relatively short period of time. And he's also an extraordinarily talented horse. And running in the Derby can work both ways and frequently works in a way that may not be best for a horse's overall best interest, you know? So we'll see if he runs. But if not, he could run in the Preakness. I think Early Voting is going to turn out to be an extremely good horse going forward. It's just a question of where he runs and how he's, you know, how his campaign. To have done what he's done in three starts is kind of remarkable, to be honest with you. A mile and 2 mile and eighth races, he's good. And he's fast.
Yeah, I mean, and he did all the heavy lifting on Saturday.
All the dirty work, I picked the winner of the race, and I've always liked that horse. But the reality is that he got an unbelievably great ride, and a lot of things worked in his favor in that race. And I'm not saying he didn't deserve the win, but to suggest that he ran a better race than Early Voting, that's kind of a stretch. And I'm not saying Early Voting ran a considerably better race than O'Donnell. But it's pretty darn close, at the very least, you know? And just because a horse won doesn't mean he ran better. But that also doesn't mean that Mo Donegal's got a horse that's better suited for this Derby, right?
Yes.
Got a lot more bottom than Early Voting. And I'm sure they'll make a good choice with Early Voting. But it's in Chad's best interest to run. And it'll be an example, if he doesn't run, of a trainer, you know, putting his horse's best interests over his own. And you also have to have the right owner to do that.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, there are a lot of trainers that have taken grief. You know, Todd Pletcher's one of them for running horses in the Derby that couldn't win. And like all top trainers or all trainers, Todd's taken a lot of the heat for owner's decisions. I don't think that Todd would have run Keyed Entry in the Derby if he had been given his choice. You know, and to hold trainers accountable for a lot of decisions that clearly come from owners is a little unfair. But
well, we'll get as part of the conversation, we'll get to a rather audacious result based on an owner decision in a minute. Beyond the wood, talk about the Gazelle. I mean, I'm a huge Venti Valentine fan. I was a little – I understand that that's not necessarily what – you know, where they wanted to be.
Let's immediately talk about that.
Yeah.
This narrative that she lost because she was on the lead is the kind of narrative that gives people the wrong impression and perverts people's thinking of reality. To suggest that walking on the front end at a very moderate pace and losing a close finish to a horse that was right on the pace with you that has never demonstrated having speed before makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And these are the kind of, you know, sort of backstretch, old wives tale, you know, just crap that still permeates racing that just bears no semblance to reality. How could you not want to be in front, setting a slow pace with the best horse? And this notion that you're better off letting an inferior horse get a tactical advantage on her because she could have had a target is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'm sorry, but this is just a frivolous and nonsensical notion. She had about as good a trip as a horse could get, and she lost. She didn't run badly. She still got a buyer in the mid-80s, and, you know, I mean, in a lot of Kentucky Oaks, she would be at least a fringe player, and she is a fringe player in this one, a very tough one. She disappointed relative to her return race, but she had everything her own way. She got a great ride, and by the way, anybody that looks at the Timeform U.S. pace figures and the pace projector is not even the least bit surprised that she was in front. It's where she figured to be, and Manny wrote her, right?
Manny wrote her, and I discussed this with Mig yesterday. I would have preferred that he throttle into the turn and scamper away the way Louis Saez does.
Presuming he could have, which we don't know that he could have, I understand that thinking, but that's a narrative that agrees with my opinion.
Yes.
You know, it says,
You're there. Take advantage. He was.
That's fine. I mean, that's a different discussion. But this notion that she lost because she's never been on the front end before.
No,
never been mile and eighth before.
She
went faster or slower early in this race than she did in her last race. But she was in front of horses.
Right.
So that's why she lost? I mean, who believes this crap?
The,
take advantage, though. Take advantage of the speed and back, trying to back the horse up into everybody. It makes me nuts. I mean, go ahead. You're moving. You know, she's moving comfortably. Scamper away and make them all panic and chase. That's Luis Saez does that better than anybody. Rosario does it well.
I don't know. You know, I guess he could have sped it up a little bit. I don't know. Like, maybe he has the better horse one on Saturday. Isn't that also possible?
Well, and she's improving. I mean, she has been getting better on dirt, you know, clop. I mean, she got a very good grip.
She got a good ride, and she won. But this notion that the favorite lost because she was in front is just...
Well, that's not the point really I'm making.
It's flawed reasoning. It doesn't hold up to any intellectual or intelligent scrutiny. It's just that old racetrack backstretch crap, in my opinion. It's just wrong.
Well, it does set up, and we can fold in, you know, if you want to mention the Ashland result with Nest blowing that race open, and this Oaks. I mean, people are in the not the first time in memory, but for as much as any Oaks in memory, people have been excited about individual fillies heading in. I've not heard people more excited about an Oaks as they are right now for this, the way this is shaped up.
Well, the Oaks has a very short history of being an important race, so it's hard for me to really judge it on any kind of historical level. It became important when suddenly, you know, Churchill's done a good job of creating the hype around the two races, but it really wasn't a big race until relatively recently. I think the most interesting thing about it is that it wasn't long ago that this group of now 3-year-old fillies looked pretty horrendous. So
yeah, it's funny.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, it was one. I mean, and this is not a knock on Echo Zulu. She's obviously terrific, but as an overall group, it was a pathetic Breeders' Cup Juvenile fillies. What do we have? 6 horses, you know. And there wasn't like you were sitting around going, "Oh, well, there's a couple of killers out there that have just broken their maidens," or you know, or something. There was just nothing out there. There weren't even a lot of horses on the shelf. But horses have really emerged. I mean, Secret Oath basically came out of nowhere. Kathleen O had, I think, broken her maiden, was it a Bellwether Aqueduct in one race, but she was, you know, she didn't do anything so spectacular. You thought she had to go into this horse, and you probably thought you break your maiden, so maybe more likely to be left.
Yeah, sure.
So, two sort of similar type horses, you know, and there's somebody else I'm leaving out.
Nest.
I forget who it is. What am I leaving out?
Who are you leaving out? Hold on, I've got.
Anyway,
yeah.
Regardless, it has come together. Horses are getting faster. Even Benji Valentine. I mean, you know. Oh, Nest.
Yeah.
I mean, Nest. Nest was slow last year. You know, when she beat Benji Valentine, that was L. She had a much wider trip, and she ran a much better race. But she still, both of them seem to be kind of slow, and they both moved forward. So you know, nostalgia's moving forward, and you know, there's emerging 3-year-old fillies, and that group is really solidified. And it's not that surprising because people start their horses later and later. So I mean, that's surprising, but it really seemed like there was a dearth of talent. And now it's coming up a really fun race. That's good. And it was a pretty fun race last year. I don't think any of us thought that Malathot or Search Results figured to run far ahead of the field. And there were a few contenders besides them.
Yeah. But,
you know, fun to look forward to these races, and you know, they're big races, so it's nice when they're good races. And so many people skip races and make point now, you know, obviously the Derby and the Oaks has become kind of a preeminent race now in the division, so it should be a good race.
While we're on that front, impressions about the distaff, Chad is going to go back to the drawing board with Search Results. He kind of chalked it up to, you know, the little bit of track condition and you know, she kind of got sulky on, you know,
yeah,
out there.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I watched both that race and the Wood with Chad. Search was, you know, she ran so badly that it's inexplicable. I mean, it's one thing to have run third, beaten four lengths, and you thought she'd run a little bit better or something. She just, I mean, she looked like she was going really well, and then she just sort of gave up on the turn. So you do wonder if something happened, and right, like you say, go back to the drawing board, and, you know, I don't know where they look. I mean, I suppose you could look at a race like the Ruffian. Is that like Derby?
That's what he said. That's what he said.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't talked to him since Saturday, but I mean, I guess that would be the logical spot. You know, you'd like to get to the fifths, but you're certainly not going from that effort to the fifths, you know? So you've got to find out if she can still run anymore. Sometimes they get, you know, and they don't want to run anymore. But
yeah, exactly.
That depression in the mornings, that's for sure.
That happens. It happens.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, how about we acknowledge what Charlie Baker has got with Glass Ceiling?
Yeah, good for Charlie. Listen, Charlie's one of the really good trainers on the scene, and he's sort of under the radar unless you're really following New York racing. And I'm thrilled for Charlie to be doing so well with her. And, you know, as I think Rishi was saying, I mean, the paddock, she's just a horse that just continues to hold her good, you know, physical form. And she just shows up and runs really well, and I'm thrilled for Charlie. One of my favorite people out there.
You know, one race I have not talked about. I mean, it's just a $100,000 overnight stake, but listed. The Danger's Hour. City Man came back running as a 5-year-old.
Yeah, he got a very good trip, but he ran. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he's usually involved in closer finishes than that, but he did run well. I agree.
As the turf season gets,
he overcame his trainer.
Clement gets it from you, left, right, and the center.
This is looking for like a free program.
You know, we were talking about Nest, about winning a grade one on the comeback, but we've got to acknowledge, I mean, Witt had been away since October, and I was defensive with him, and I even made the note that Nest's performance on Friday made me take a second glance and be concerned about Witt's ability to come back running, and he did.
Well, I'm not sure how the two are related.
It's not related. I'm just saying that having the comeback for Witt, it made me think to myself, you know, don't just dismiss this horse.
It's fine to dismiss Witt. I don't think there's any analogy to Nest winning the Ashland or second start going two turns as a favorite. Sorry. We're going to have to agree to disagree.
I wrote what I
went outside and I saw a guy walking three dogs and I thought he's going to really move up highly respected.
I included Witt and hit the late whatever on Saturday, the late pick four. Because I think you're
being completely ridiculous.
No, I was ready to not use Witt at all. And so okay. I'm just saying. I was.
But Nest winning made you want to use
it. It did actually. It just did.
Okay. I'm sorry. It wasn't like a hummingbird or something.
It might have been a hummingbird. That was a.
The interesting thing about Witt on a conversation that has at least some reality in it is that he broke well and was then attending the pace. I thought that was the most interesting thing about Witt. Obviously, he ran very well. He was very keen to come back. And in highly respected, ran extremely well, too. I mean, the only bob he didn't have a lead, the stretch, was the one at the wire. And, you know,
right.
For all intents and purposes, he ran a winning race as well. And if he had won by a nose, Witt would have run really well. I mean, I don't want to give credit to the winner without acknowledging the loser one way or the other.
Right.
But I think the interesting thing about Witt, outside of winning a head bob, is that he broke very well for the first time in his career. And as a result of that, unlike his prior races, he didn't take himself out of the race early. Because he not only would break a little slow, he would then drop himself out of the race. So he was a completely different horse and a far more professional one in this race. And then he showed that incredible gameness in the stretch. I know I was very impressed by him. It was a terrific comeback. And obviously, if you're Todd and Mike Rapoli, you have to be really pleased with him. I think if he had lost the race by half a length even,
yeah,
he would have been very pleased with his effort. Same as highly respected. I'm sure Chad felt the same way. Second career start, moving up. He had to sit behind horses. He split horses like that, I'm sure. I, I haven't talked to Chad about it, but I'm sure he's extremely. I mean, he's already lost bad Bob, but when you take the, you know, a few hours to get away from it, you take a step back and think, geez, he ran great. He ran a winning race. He lost bad Bob. It was a second career start and sets both of them up very well for the Woody Stevens.
Yes.
And I imagine that's where they're going. I don't think they're going to rush to run that Derby trip trial or whatever it is, the Pat Day Mile. I'm going to keep calling the Derby trial.
No.
Maybe they are, but I would guess they don't show up there.
Well,
guess otherwise?
No. What did he say? What did he say? Because he did address it. He does want to stretch him out. What did he?
Oh, maybe he's got other ideas. I don't know.
Hold on. Let me. I. There's so many. You know. There were so many that we talked about.
Okay.
What did he say? Hold on. What did he say about highly respected? Sometimes I'm able to keep notes on these pages and jot stuff down. He does think that highly respected is going to stretch out and right the dialed in. I think he hinted toward might not be immediately, but he did hint at stretching him out. All right, let's stretch out.
You can run into Peter Pan if you want.
Well, somebody else brought up the Peter Pan to me.
I have no idea.
Actually, that was off air. Mark Cassie is running Golden Glider in the Peter Pan.
He did.
And he's basically on the same path that Sir Winston took. Identical,
well,
actually.
It's a gold rail, and you know the best horse gets a 10-wide trip. Maybe he could do well in Poland.
Before I ask you about a couple other performances at Keeneland and Santa Anita. Gary's going to join us next and talk about Exotic West. What a nice...
I don't want to steal Gary's thunder.
All right. That was great, though. Anything from Keeneland?
I really don't... I'm a little busy. It's, you know, you're on the air and do these things, so I didn't pay attention to their races. But, I think that Zandon showed... I mean, the idea that people looked at the Risen Star and said, I want Smile Happy in that race out of Zandon, goes against everything I believe in racing, which is trying to watch trips. And not that Smile Happy didn't run fine in there, but, you know, to compare the two trips was ludicrous. I mean, one horse got completely left and shuffled back to last and made this huge, wide middle move. And the other horse just sort of got a good trip, stayed inside, and kind of got a good, you know, comfortable suck-up second. Not saying that Smile Happy is a suck-up type horse, but the difference in trips in the Risen Star was extreme. So it's no surprise that Zandon beat him, and he beat him getting a tougher trip in this race. I know people think that Smile Happy was much wider. I think Grand Trackus was 16 feet, so he really wasn't much wider. And Zandon gets shuffled back to last and still just sort of blows him away. So it's impossible not to be impressed by him. And I think, you know, when I tweeted this yesterday, I'm not saying that I like Zandon at Epicenter for the Derby, but I think that the two of them right now have shown themselves to be the two most logical horses
sure.
at this point. You know, I understand that some people will say that Taba deserves to be in that discussion, and if that works for them, fine. I think he's very, very strong to be 13th to 18th in the race. But I understand it was an owner's call to run the Santa Anita Derby, and that owner has a right to say he was right to run him there. The problem is that when you go on that path, you're now on a path that doesn't have a good history of working out
no.
either in the Derby and overall going forward, because now you're asking him to run a mile and a quarter race in a big, huge field where he's not going to get the same kind of soft trip he got in Santa Anita. And I'm not saying he didn't run well at Santa Anita, because he did. And I'm not knocking him, because I think he is the most talented horse that will likely be in this Derby. He's probably the most talented horse we've seen in this crop so far.
Yeah.
I just think if he had had more of an Arrogate-type campaign, then he would have had a chance to, not saying he would have been as good as Arrogate, but, you know, to be that kind of horse. And these kind of excessively ambitious campaigns, especially in this specific instance, you know, this specific path, history is not littered with this going well.
Andy,
doesn't mean this horse can't be the exception, but he'll be the exception at the expense of my bets.
Well,
it's not some Bob Baffert hate thing by any measure, because I'm not in that club. My issues with Bob are accepting responsibility. I think there are plenty of other narratives about him that are disgraceful. I think this is an exceptional horse. And obviously Bob's had a lot to do with bringing him along as well. And I'm not a Bob Baffert hater, nor will I ever be.
Well, and Andy was on with us yesterday, Byer, and he echoed a lot of this, or you're echoing a lot of that. Same thing. Yeah, exactly.
Now, this horse and Bob.
It's true.
You know, to deny that Bob Baffert's one of the greatest dirt trainers ever is foolish.
Andy. In fact, bringing Byer's name up too made me think of something that I should have asked him, and I'll ask you because I know you answered it online. The way in which the figs seem to reflect Andy thought that the track was slowing down as the afternoon went on.
I defer to Andy. I know that Craig Mikowski seems to somewhat disagree with Andy. I respect Craig as well. I'm going to defer to Andy in this situation. I don't think there's any rational person that thinks that Glass Ceiling and the second place finisher would have finished second and third in the Carter. So it's obvious that the track did speed up, did slow down to a certain extent. And I don't think that there's any rash person thinks that Wit and Highly Respected would have lost the distaff by 10 lengths. So I do tend to defer to Andy's opinion on that. And as much as the Wood was a better race than the Demoiselle, even with a slightly slower pace, 2.5 seconds is a lot, you know? So I'm not surprised at that. How much it is, I don't know, you know? And this is something that Andy takes extremely seriously, and I'm going to defer to him.
No, fair enough. People just didn't understand. They don't understand at a glance.
What people should understand is, if they actually believe that a figure of Andy's is inaccurate, then that's going to be to their benefit betting. And if they're correct, they're going to make money as a result of it. So instead of just this insane attacking of the messenger, if you disagree, use it to your benefit. If you're right, get paid. You should be happy if you think a figure is wrong. There have been figures of Andy that I've known were wrong. There was one at Parts on the turf that was inaccurately done, that I made plenty of money with a dome on a few years ago. You don't have to make it some sort of personal thing. And there's too much of that going around when it comes to Andy and other people in racing, sometimes myself, and in life. This need to attack the person because you disagree with them.
Yeah, well said.
It's okay to disagree. It's not okay to attack people because you disagree with them.
Well, and ask a question and then you can understand. I mean, the races were run 2 hours and 15 minutes apart.
Right. If you actually believe you're right, great. You'll make money with it if you are. Or maybe you'll be wrong and it'll cost you money. And that's okay, too. Then you'll learn something.
Exactly.
I mean, it's all good. But there's just way too much nastiness out there. And it's absolutely a result of social media.
Agreed.
And it's extremely harmful, and it's extremely it can be depressing at times to see.
Say the
least. People attacking a guy like Andy, who has as much integrity as anybody I have ever or will ever meet in life. You don't have to like Andy, but he's got as much integrity as anybody you'll ever meet.
And has given his entire life and career to service to the game.
Making racing better.
Yeah.
Unlike the people that attack him.
Andy, before we wrap, what's the prospects on Thursday in that pick six sequence? Seems pretty challenging.
Let's see. I have finished my picks for Thursday.
You're amazing. I told everybody you were
done.
You
have somebody after me?
I do. I got Siaka. I got a quick hit with Siaka.
Okay. Well, there's a 2-5 cinch on paper in the first leg. The second leg is extremely tough. The third leg is a mishmash of horses where I think I picked the favorite. They got to beat Mark Cassie in the seventh. There are a couple other options. The 8th is an open race, and the 9th is wide open. So there's a mix. Don't let me take away any more of Gary's first appearance on Athens.
First appearance of April. Andy Serling, everybody, and a terrific visit. Let me quickly get to Gary. We've got 8 minutes to wrap up on what's been another day two of the weekend recap. Plus, you got a little tax advice. I'm not going to charge you for that. That one was gratis, but if you need help, the Green Group, don't hesitate to reach out. Green Co. GreenCo.com. And here we go. All right. Let me get our man in here for a bow. He deserves it, boy. What a. There he is, and delighted as always to be able to congratulate Gary and Louis Lazzanero on the Top Flight win. Gary, well done. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. How's everything going?
We're good. That was so much fun to watch, and you know, I could tell because I get those texts from the racing office. The racing office sends out a message if anybody has got wants to consider the Top Flight. The box is open. It's coming up light, and you swung into action.
Yeah, well, I was over there, and I had her in on Thursday, and I said, "How many have in there?" And I says, "Maybe I'll take a shot, because the horse that when she stumbled coming out the gate was the favorite in the race." So I says, "Why not try her again? If she don't stumble, maybe she'll be all right." So I called up Louie, and I said, "Louie, I want to take a shot and run her in here. You know, she's a mare, and it would help her breeding if she's,
anything
black type with her."
Yeah, even if she hits the board.
Yeah, he said, "Whatever you want, Gary." I mean, Louie's great. Louie's super, so.
Well, this was a big weekend. I said this yesterday with Mig. This was a big weekend for people who play the game at a certain level, and a $40,000 claim for you and Louie. Charlie Baker on Saturday wins with a $40,000 claim. They win, you know, the distaff handicap with glass ceiling. She was a $40,000 claim. It's got to make people that play the game at that level, it's got to be encouraging.
It really is. I mean, especially with Louie has other horses and
sure.
stuff, and, but he's thrilled. He is just so thrilled, and he compliments me so much. I mean, he's great. Because, you know, from where she was and where she is now, she's a whole different horse.
Well, and talk about that, because I remember this summer that right at the beginning, fairly early in the meet, you said, "I'm looking for... you know, looking for a horse, Louie wants to claim one." And you pick her out, talk about identifying her, and you obviously had an idea with her, a hard-spun filly, to put her on the grass at first. I mean, talk about what went into picking her out.
Yeah, well, we were together looking, we went on a couple, things didn't work out right. And Louis called me up and says, "What do you think of this horse in the last race?" So I says, "Let me get back to you, Louis. I did a little homework on it." I said, "You know, she's all right. Catalano had her down in Florida, down in Kentucky there. So she did really, you know, he kind of liked her and stuff." So I called Louis back up. I said, "Louis, the race is taking off the grass. They're going to run her." I says, "If she looks good, let's take her." He says, "Well, if you like her, go ahead." And I went over there. A big, good-looking filly. Not like she looks like now. She's put a lot of weight on and really filled herself out. But she had the frame to be a nice-looking horse.
Unbelievable. And then you went ahead and put her on the grass for the next few starts until the season ended. But it's really, and she was competitive. She ran fine. Bunch of 70s buyers.
She probably could have won. She got in trouble twice. She could have won. You know, we just gave her a little more. Louie's great. Louie said, "Give her all the time." We just took our time. We never ran her back fast. Just let her grow up and come to herself. And I ran her. She stumbled coming out the gate through the rider, and she bred the quarter pretty good. We had to give her a little bit more time. But she went before that, and I ran her back, and she won after that. And then we came back and took a shot here, you know, and she just Boy, she came home the last eight to 11-4, and he never even touched her.
No, no, and he took her off the rail, and she just blew by him. And
yeah, once Javier Castellano took her off the rail, the 3-8 pole, and it worked out perfect. She had a great trip. It was almost on the outside of her. From the half-mile pole to the 3-8 pole, the time that she got to the 3-8 pole, that order was getting a little tight, and Javier just eased her out a little bit, and that was it.
Unbelievable. 89 buyer.
Amazing. Yeah, 89 never even had a... just showed it a stick. That's all he did. It was unbelievable.
You know, it's funny how you, after all these years, you and Javier suddenly have become an item.
Well, I used to ride him a long time ago, and PJ's got him, and I'm pretty good friends with PJ.
Yep. Yeah, and he's kind of put it back together.
And Castellano likes and gets along well with Louis Lazzanero.
Nice. Well, Louis, it's funny. One thing that came up yesterday with Mig, too, and Mig, he had you on TV. Louis sent the nicest text to me on Sunday night. He said, "We're over at Stella's, and Gary makes it so much fun." He said, you know, and that, I say it all the time. I mean, you're going to be involved. You want to be together. You want to celebrate together. If you get beat, you take the licks together, and you know, you make it fun for everybody.
Even when I put her in, I called Louis up. I said, "Louis, it may sound crazy. I'm in the office right now." I says, "I'm going to put her in a stake on Sunday." He goes, "Really?" I says, "Yeah." I says, "It's coming up a little small field, a couple of tough horses in there, but you know, let's take a shot for Black Diamond." He said, "Whatever you want to do, you do."
I love it.
That was his answer.
It's been certainly a great way to head into the Belmont season. Another couple of weeks at Aqueduct, and we'll slowly work our way over to Belmont and then upstate. Gary, I'm so happy for you, and we'll look forward to getting
down. Thanks, Steve.
Well done, great job. I'm going to be gone for the next few weeks, so hopefully I won't be there when Scherzando breaks the maiden coming up in a few weeks.
All right, we'll follow for you.
All right, I love it. Gary Siak, everybody, and
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. The top flight, which you didn't have. That was one stake. Well, stakes you've won, you had never won a top flight.
No, it was nice to win it. And like I said, for my friend Louis, it was even nicer. He's a great guy.
Everybody loves Louis, and everybody should go to Nove. Don't forget to include...
Exactly. We'll have a good time there this year.
Big time. Thanks, Jay.
Okay, thank you, Steve. All right, bye-bye.
Gary Siaka, folks, and what a great way to wrap up. What a great job. Unbelievable. I got to make this Philly into a stake winner. Thanks to Gary. Thanks to Andy. Thanks to Chad Brown, Len Green, Phil D'Amato, and Aaron Yagoda, and Anthony Stabile to open the show to encourage everybody. Didn't have a lot of time. I should have brought up Julio Pazua. I'm sure he's won some races for Gary, too. That GoFundMe for Julio Pazua as well. Now it's up to $11,000 already. Outstanding. Wesley Ward just gave $1,000. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, of course, and then Wednesday edition at the races. Some Dick Powell will do some fun action at Happy Valley, and Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Much, much more. Thanks, everybody. Good luck if you're playing today. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd. PA races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.